Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Access Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Lainey Bond. And Lainey is going to talk about her Nurse Advocacy Network. So I'm sorry if I pronounced it wrong. So, Lainey, tell us a little bit about your network and what you do with it.
Thank you, Cynthia. As I've mentioned before when I've spoken with you, I am a nurse. My background consists of acute and critical care in the hospital setting. I left that setting in 2007 due to my concerns over short staffing and lack of resources to deliver the care that I felt was safe. As I was trained in school and trying to follow all of the rules that I'd been taught as a nursing student, I didn't feel that the position was enabling me to do that. I gave great care even on the worst of days, and my teammates, my nurses that I worked with were incredible. They would pitch in if there was an emergency. Personality mixes didn't matter. The whole thing was taking care of those patients first. But I did have a really bad experience one day when I had a patient go into a coma, and I had four other critical patients that needed care, and I was on a mother-baby unit, and I couldn't take care of any of them the way that I felt I needed to or a way that my license mandated, you know, within my scope of practice. So therefore, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and I left hospital nursing. Very difficult. This happens with nurses all the time. You establish this camaraderie that can't be duplicated in many places. I know veterans get this feeling and other people who work in emergency services and first response, but it's very hard to leave your nursing family when you are in a unit like that. But when it comes down to me questioning whether or not I served my patients the way I needed to, and having that problem being caused by the hospital system itself because they wouldn't staff us properly, I felt it was more important for me to leave. So that is a little bit of my background. I have been working in nursing since 2002, so 18 years now. After I left the hospital, I went to the community health system, worked with the Department of Health in a program for mothers and new babies, and it was really, really great. But again, resources were not put into that program. I was working in the inner city. In a matter of a month, I was exposed to guns twice and threatened with people, and I got stuck in a house with an actively schizophrenic patient who was off her medications and psychotic, and her psychotic brother, both in their 30s, they're not children, 7 o'clock, and my family could not find me, and there were no bosses to call. There were no security check. There was no safety in place for the nurses going into these homes that were obviously very challenged and underserved and needed more resources, but you have to protect the people going into these homes. So then I left the community health setting. I was very fortunate to have opportunities to teach at other hospitals. I taught childbirth for a while, and I worked in employee health, which is awesome. It led me to workers' compensation. So I became a case manager for workers' compensation, going to appointments with injured workers, helping their treatment stay on track, and helping those who really wanted help and nudging those who needed a little inspiration to get back to work. And from there, I took over a national catastrophic program where I had 1,200 nurses that I would coordinate for emergency responses and mass casualty incidents for workers' comp and liability insurance. I have now moved. Coincidentally, I left that job because of understaffing as well. I found myself working about 20 hours in this highly intense program and not being able to sleep and, you know, suffering some degree of trauma from the stories I was hearing and seeing, 20 hours a day. So I took another job with another medical management company, and I am participating in helping to run 5 national networks now, one of them being behavioral health. And I think it's really a great mix. So getting to COVID and how I started the nonprofit, when I heard about the pandemic coming, I knew based on my epidemiology training that this would be a 2-year cycle and that there was going to be some level of shutdown. So my husband and I headed home immediately. We had been on a series of business traveling trips, and we were going on vacation. Everything was canceled, and we came back to home so we could be near our family through this crisis. It was a really good move. But then I found myself sitting at home just fretting. I was so worried about my nursing family, those I knew, those I had worked with, and then also those I didn't know, but I knew what they were going to be going through. So my own therapy was to start a Facebook support group. It's called COVID Nurses, COVID-19 Nurses. There's no dash in the COVID-19. And I just started trying to find facts because I knew these nurses would be going into work every day. They would be exhausted. They would be getting sick. They would not have the energy to find the information. So I did my best to find facts. And at first, in the early days of the pandemic, there were no facts to find. So it was mostly moral support, kind of scanning the internet, trying to find stories of other hospitals or in other states, what they were doing. And as the little glimmers of information were starting to come out, I was grabbing them and posting them. So in the first week of my group, I had 1,000 followers. And then as of today, we're approaching or have just passed 5,000 followers. And I have made it a strict policy in my group, no politics, no religious discussions. If you want to thank God or thank Allah, that's fine. But we're not getting into any debates over this. It's a drama-free zone. And, you know, the vaccine is a hot topic. So we're not really discussing the pros, or we are discussing the pros and cons of the vaccine, but we're not discussing the debates around the other issues in developing the vaccine. We're just trying to keep people on track, giving them the information they need. So out of that, I had some nurses that really call my group their lifeline. And that really kind of hit me very hard. I did not expect that. I knew the people I had were like-minded. I knew they were incredible. The stuff they're doing, retired nurses weighing in, sharing their experiences, ICU nurses debriefing after a horrible day, sharing what they've seen, questions they have about this or that, because not one person can know everything about medicine. So there's always a condition you can talk to another professional about and get some really valuable information. And this became that forum. So I had a nurse call me directly. Well, I had several nurses reach out. They needed mental health support. So I was able to coordinate some free services, typically like 4 free sessions for them, in hopes of, you know, avoiding a PTSD episode or just helping them get back into their routine so they could get back to work. But I did have a nurse reach out to me and tell me she was suicidal. So in that moment, my mission became clear that I needed to start some sort of a crisis response effort for these nurses that are just past any tolerable human limits. I have very successfully been able to work with this nurse. I mean, she was very isolated, alone, very little support. Well, I'll say no family support. So I have worked with her and given her purpose, and she's helping me administer in my groups. I have a couple groups. I have one that's also for the community versus the professional discussion group. But what I then found were resources that were going to help me with this nonprofit. And it's just getting off its feet now in the early December time of holidays. But I'm putting some really great stuff together. And I think in 6 months, this is going to be, you know, a potential impact on the medical and healthcare communities. I think it's going to be a great resource to change, or at least start to change, some of the faces of nursing that are so dangerous and disruptive to healthcare workers. So I've got some mental health care lined up. I've got some research associated with that. I've got an amazing grant writer who's going to help me with that aspect, partnered with a PPE distributor, and I can give more information at the end of the podcast. I'd like to just give their companies a shout out. But I'm put pieces in place for the needs of the nurses while I continue to research facts. So, you know, I don't want my group posting things about, like, those dramatic videos from a nurse that's really been harmed and such, because they become so controversial. So they're very opinionated. We don't want to work off opinions. But, you know, if there's a news story that's really important for us to get out, I'd rather go to that empirical research and post that and share that. And I think that by being a straight shooter, that has given me some level of a reputation that is giving me credibility in putting this nonprofit together.
Let me ask you this question. What's the attrition rate during COVID for nurses? Is it high?
Yeah, it's huge. So there, during the first wave, there are a lot of nurses who said that once this is over, they're not going to continue nursing. There are a lot of nurses who have just gotten beyond the breaking point and will not go back. Some of them have contracted COVID. Some of them have not, or at least not been hospitalized for it. I can't give you a number on that, but an example I gave you the last time we spoke, which is very crystal clear. I have a nurse that I'm friends with now. She's a new friend through the group. And she went into work one day and expected to have 15 people, other nurses, to care for all of the patients. And only 5 showed up. So several were sick, a few had quit. So that's operating the same level of care for the same number of patients with only 1/3 of the staff. I've seen posts from nurses that walk in and they have, and this is normal in their setting, 140 patients. But that's typically low acuity, people who are more like assisted living, maybe need oversight with their nutrition and such. And they are walking into work with 24 patients on ventilators when normal is only 2. In an ICU, you might end up with 3, maximum 4, like for 4 hours or something till the next nurse comes in if there's been another catastrophe or another catastrophic injury that the patient requires help. So to be able to manage 12 ventilators and properly and safely care for those patients is an impossible task. And honestly, Cynthia, I don't know why those nurses keep going back to work. The only thing I can suggest is that this is their livelihood. They cannot pay their bills if they don't go back to work. So they are forced to continue to work under these conditions, and they have very few options, especially now with the pandemic, because, you know, hospitals have had to cut back on other areas, and in the patient interfacing or the non-patient interfacing nursing jobs have quickly gone to the wayside. So we're needing ICU nurses, emergency room nurses. We're needing med-surg nurses. We're needing these long-term care nurses. We're needing post-acute care nurses. And not everybody can do that. I mean, it's an impossible situation. Sometime in the last week, the CEO of a major healthcare company got on a newscast and announced that his hospital is going under. Plea to the community to please, please adhere to the social distancing, masking, sanitizing rules, because these hospitals are inundated and they cannot sustain, and the nurses cannot continue to keep up because they're getting sick still. And that's nurses even with the PPE and without the PPE. The PPE is a helpful preventive measure, but it's not 100%. I mean, if the whole unit is contaminated with people on ventilators with aerosolized particulate from COVID-19, you go outside of the room, you take off your mask, you're still embedded in that atmosphere unless the hospital has been able to create a negative pressure situation, which is where the air is vented directly outside and not recirculated within the unit. And to do that, that's obviously a structural modification. Some hospitals have done that. I've seen pictures of a hospital in Texas. I don't recall the name of the hospital, but they actually had ductwork in the hall and had created a vacuum that took the air out of the hall and went out a window that they had modified to create a negative pressure unit. And the walls were sealed at the end by plastic covering so that you could come in and out, but the doors didn't stay open. And they were making their best effort to contain the virus and to get it outside.
You know, as we talk, I kind of think back, you know, and doing some reading about pandemic of 1918, you know, the medical profession has come a long way since then. If things are horrific now, has there been any research done on nursing and medical staff during the 1918 pandemic? And what was the finding?
So I honestly have not had time to get into an in-depth review of research on that, but I also will say it hasn't crossed my path. So when I'm researching, I did do a brief search on the 1918 pandemic to try to compare, you know, their interventions and get an idea how long that lasted and what was successful. I came across pictures of nurses with masks on, and they were not masks like we have today. They were things like bandanas tied across their faces and scarves. But even in 1918, it seems to me that people were aware that coughing spread the germ. So I'm not even sure how well organized medicine was at that point to do research, and that is something I could look at in the future. But honestly, there's so much on my plate right now just trying to keep up with today's evolving situation.
Right.
There's always
right.
something new, always something new every single day. And it always shocks me how fast this moves. And I'm so impressed by the medical community at responding to this. The pharmaceutical companies that have removed their barriers, they're not worried about their proprietary information in this effort. I think it was 10 pharmaceutical companies that have joined together to share resources. Unprecedented. This is unprecedented. And that's part of the success with finding a vaccine. Also, the science behind the RNA splicing that's being used for this vaccine is not brand new. So they have been working on that for several years since I think it was the SARS pandemic or epidemic that came out a few years ago or that was present a few years ago. So I think that medicine today can't really be compared to medicine in 1918. It's a different creature, you know.
You know, you're talking about nurses. I'm sure that you've come across doctors. Are they experiencing the same kind of stress that nurses are, from your understanding?
Is who experiencing the stress like nurses are?
Doctors.
Oh, yes. So that's a really important point, and thank you for bringing that up. I call my group the Nurse Advocacy Network because nurses are the largest workforce in the medical field. So nurses are also very altruistic, and that's part of what's gotten them into this place where the hospitals are not really taking care of them properly or can't take care of them properly. But when nurses go to work every day, they are putting their lives on the line intentionally to take care of strangers, to take care of their friends, to take care of their families. And they know that risk. And the other piece of that is nurses are all inclusive. So nurses do not have any judgment. We do not participate in, you know, racial discrimination. We honor and respect all cultures, and this is an essential part of our training. And in that mindset, when I talk about nurses, I am talking about all healthcare workers. I'm talking about housekeepers, about the people who work in the hospitals and deliver the food, take off the orders. I'm talking about doctors. I'm talking about physician assistants. I'm talking about respiratory therapists, occupational physical therapy. Anybody who's involved in healthcare is, in my consideration, under that umbrella of the Nurse Advocacy Network, because you can't work alone. And again, I chose nurses because, first of all, I am a nurse, but also because it's the largest workforce in medical care. So we need to take care of everybody, because no group can be successful by only taking care of their own. We can't be successful without physicians and researchers. We cannot be successful without techs and housekeepers and the people who do all of the work that allows us to focus on the medical care for the patients.
So when COVID hit and people started getting sick and going into the hospital, were you aware of how severe the impact was going to be on the medical profession?
Yes, and
given
no.
The fact that you had, you know, kind of left hands-on nursing a few years back. So what was your reaction to COVID first hit?
My expectation when COVID first hit was that my nursing family was going to be in crisis. It's just a reality. It's why any nurse leaves bedside nursing. Some of them just love it and it's all they'll ever do. And the others need to find another way to help people and take care of them without making themselves sick. So I knew that nurses would be exhausted. I knew they would be getting sick. I knew some of them would die. And in fact, I originally established my Facebook group saying we need to change things. But what I see is that the change isn't going to come about fast. I've got a lot of nurses who've already done a lot of grassroots efforts trying to get regulations and stuff changed, and it's just not working fast enough to save the people that are at risk right now. So I knew this would be devastating. I never in my wildest imagination thought that I would be seeing nurses reusing N95 masks. I never thought there would be a shortage of gloves and masks and hand sanitizer and soap. I never in my wildest dreams expected to see nurses wearing garbage bags and dollar store ponchos as personal protective equipment.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, I can't imagine, and I think I touched this on our last interview. If you're in a situation, a stressful situation, where you go back to work every day, every day, every day under these conditions, I find it so unfathomable that the human spirit can do this. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. It's just being immersed in trauma, and you don't leave the trauma at the door when you walk out of work. That trauma has. I will share with you that I've been working with this one fellow who does an amazing job. He's got for lack of a better word, an emergency response company, and he's been helping in areas that are hard hit that need some rehabilitation, like long-term cares that are having high death rates and such. And he's looking for boots on the ground, people who can go in with him and scrub these facilities and clean them and help get them reorganized. And after, I'm so excited to be connected with him, and I'm so interested in working with him. But that night when I went to bed, I had a nightmare. I had a nightmare that I was on the floor, that I was taking care of people and I couldn't keep up with it, and that I wasn't having the ventilator settings correctly, and that people were dying, and I was afraid I was making my coworkers sick by being asymptomatic and sharing my germs with them when we weren't in the room. And so this is a nightmare that I've had, and I have never stepped foot into a COVID ICU. So I can't imagine how these amazing people who are doing this day after day are, first of all, coping with this. I can't imagine how they're sleeping. I can't imagine how they're conducting any sense of a normal life outside of work.
So give us the information, and if there's people listening out there who'd like to join your group, tell them how they can do so.
So I'm in the process of getting my website up and running. You can visit it, but please understand that it's a work in progress. It's nurseadvocacynetwork, all one word, .org, nurseadvocacynetwork.org. If you are a healthcare worker in an emergent situation and you need emergency mental health care, you can email us at savinglives@nurseadvocacynetwork.org. You can reach out to me via my Facebook group. It's the COVID-19 Nurses. It's got a picture. It's a painting that an artist generously donated to me of a nurse kind of staring out a window. And if you open the whole profile picture, you'll see what looks to me like souls walking out the window. It's in like teals and greens and blues. It's just a beautiful and poignant picture. If you're in the community and are having COVID long-term symptoms, or you need just some more information for somebody you know or love, you can join my COVID-19 Long Haulers Support Group. That's the whole name, COVID-19 Long Haulers Support. And the background picture on that in Facebook is kind of a blue setting with a stethoscope on it. And we've got some nurses in there, but we've also got a lot of community members. So you can reach out to me in any of those ways, and I'm more than happy to help out. I also have a Facebook page for Nurse Advocacy Network. I am in the process of getting that up and running, but if you need to connect with me through that, please do, and follow my page. I have a Facebook fundraiser up and running through December 14th. I'm trying to get some funds to get some emergency care and help to some of these nurses that are now long haulers with permanent damage. I have personally purchased groceries for some nurses. I have arranged mental health care for some nurses out of my own pocket. So any donations to help with that effort would be greatly appreciated. So that's through the Nurse Advocacy Network page on Facebook, and that is a fundraiser going on through the 14th. I've had a wonderful artist, Steve Derrick. He has been, and I think he accidentally fell into this, but he's been painting pictures. Nurses send him their picture, and then he paints them and turns them back, and you will see that these paintings are on the Facebook fundraiser, and they are just poignant. He's learned to capture the eyes, and it just tells a story there.
So, Lainey, we're out of time, and I'm sure that you and I will have further discussions because there's a lot to talk about. So you've been listening to All Exits Closed. You've been listening to my guest, Lainey Bond. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like the show, like us on Facebook. Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you, Lainey, for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you, Cynthia.